Welcome to the Football Game Plan Radio Network, where football makes sense. This is our Draft Prospect Analysis Show. I'm your host, Chris James, Director of Football Operations over here at Football Game Plan. We have an excellent show lined up for you this week, folks. Going to continue ranking prospects. This week I'm going to take care of the offensive line. I'm going to go over the offensive tackles, guards, and center prospects. I'm also going to discuss with you some of the free agency moves that were made so far in this period. Remember, free agency directly affects the draft. In fact, it affects the draft more than any other decision-making process for a team, because if you're able to get a proven veteran from another team, you have tape on him in your actual industry, in the NFL, and not just tape of the prelim, which is the college game or, let's say, the CFL game. You get to see these guys in NFL action, you play it against them, you get the feedback from your coaches, players, things like that, so that you really know what you're getting as a prospect in general compared to the draft. But it affects what you're going to do, especially high in the NFL draft. So we're going to go over some of the major moves in free agency, kind of discuss what's going on, how the teams that have made the pick and the team that lost out on the player will be affected early in the NFL's upcoming draft. Then, like I said, going to jump into the offensive line prospects after that. Folks, if you ever want to participate in the show, feel free to give me a call. The call-in number is 323-657-1489. That's 323-657-1489. Now, probably one of the biggest deals done this week and the deal that just closed today. I discussed this team last week in my conversations about the moves that the coach made and how angry the fan base was. But you really don't know until you see a big splash like this. And that's DeMarco Murray signing with division rival Philadelphia Eagles. Now that's huge on so many different levels. Just think about what was said about Chip Kelly as he lost out on LeSean McCoy last week. What is he doing? He's destroying his team. He's getting rid of all the talent. How do I even root for this team anymore? Things like that were literally uttered loudly by the fan base of the Eagles, and rightfully so. You pay for a product with the expectation that you're going to be entertained. There's not many running backs in the NFL who are more entertaining than LeSean McCoy. He is the ultimate flag football player, and that's not an insult. It means if you just had to grab his flag, you couldn't. If you had to play touch football against this guy, you probably couldn't even if you were in a phone booth. That's how shifty he is. But that didn't fit what Chip Kelly wanted. Probably drove a guy who's very controlling and sane. So you get DeMarco Murray. You know where he's going. Downhill. He sees the hole developing. He gets to the hole, and he gets downhill. Now, the negative about DeMarco Murray that comes into play here is, obviously, they're going to talk about the carries and things like that. My biggest concern is, even though he has the ability to make one miss, he likes to take on guys. He likes to prove things. And that's, you know, to some respect, that's fine. But in other respects, it's not for longevity. The thing is, the Eagles get a big-name player that they can attach themselves to. Their fan base is now pleased to at least have another big-name guy to attach themselves to, because they've lost all their stars. All the star power is gone. DeSean Jackson, LeSean McCoy, even Jeremy Maclin, who was a secondary star, a local star, has been lost. So they needed someone to attach themselves to. Now, what this does for the Eagles in the draft, I said that they would probably go after a guy like Amir Abdullah, someone who could actually work well in that system in the early third round if they were able to make something happen. Now they're probably less concerned with that running back position, as they have DeMarco Murray. They've tendered Ryan Matthews. I'm pretty sure they'll probably withdraw the contract. I doubt that they'll have Matthews and DeMarco Murray and Darren Sproles on the roster. That's a lot of money to pay for running backs. That's going to be upwards of $12 million per year, maybe even closer to 14, depending on what they're going to do with the Sproles contract. So I doubt that Ryan Matthews keeps that offer or gets that offer. And it's one of those things, you snooze, you lose, because it looked like the Eagles were actually pretty ready to go with Ryan Matthews, but instead they get a bigger fish, DeMarco Murray. And remember, folks, I did say this last year, and I do mean it. I don't think DeMarco Murray is the best running back in the league. He did lead the league in rushing yards. I think that he's a top 10 running back, and people say that that's an insult. But when I look at guys, I look at guys who I definitely think are better. I look at guys like, I think Adrian Peterson, until knocked off his pedestal, is the best running back in the league. I look at Marshawn Lynch and think that he is probably the most efficient running back over the last half decade and probably the most consistent running back of anyone that's in the league. I look at Le'Veon Bell and say that he's the best combo running back, not only running the ball but receiving out of the backfield, and with losing that extra 15 pounds or so, did not lose his power but increased his agility and quickness and full-on foot speed. So I look at those guys as being definite. I look at a healthy Arian Foster, I think, is better. You know, there's the next tier down. A healthy Arian Foster is better than me than DeMarco Murray. A healthy Jamaal Charles, to me, is better than DeMarco Murray. Now, in the line of fire with, I think that LeSean McCoy is on the same level as DeMarco Murray. They do different things, but I think that they're very similar as far as the level that they operate on. So like I said, he's a top 10 back, arguably a top 5, and the Eagles fans get something to please themselves with. The Eagles will now start to focus more on some of the defensive needs. And speaking of defensive needs, they went after Byron Maxwell, another signing. So now you're starting to take care of the secondary. As you see, they go get Byron Maxwell, a guy who can play the press corner position. They signed him for a pretty hefty contract for a guy who hasn't been proven to be the number one guy. They signed him to a number one corner tender, as far as I know. And you know what? Say like this, you got to go out there and test the market sometimes. Byron Maxwell has played very well in a starting role for a Super Bowl champion / Super Bowl runner-up defense, no doubt. So he's earned the opportunity to be paid like this. Let's see if he'll come through. Personally, I think that he is probably the best number two corner in the NFL, but I think he's not one of the better corners in the NFL. He's not a top 10 corner in the NFL. So he was paid like one. So for the Eagles' sake, I hope that they do something with that. I think the Eagles will probably early in the draft attack a position that they attacked last year. Excuse me. I think that they really will go after a guy to rush the passer. Creating pressure on the opposition is huge. So expect them early on to go after a pass rusher. Why do I say this? Or even if they get so lucky, which I doubt, if this guy, a guy like Landon Collins, a playmaker at safety falls to him. I doubt that he falls that far, but you never know. They might even move up to a few spots to get a guy like him to play that safety position. Sticking with the Eagles, they signed a guy in a trade, and they kind of sent away a little bit of their ammunition in this draft. They got Sam Bradford. Now, there's been lots of talk about you shipped away Nick Foles, a guy who was this, that, and the other for Sam Bradford, and I say this. Nick Foles, to me, and I said this to Eagles fans, he was an average quarterback who played pretty well in this offense, did his job, but you were never going to win anything with Nick Foles. That's my opinion. Sam Bradford, if healthy, and that's the big if healthy, I think that Sam Bradford would be fine in this offense. People will say, oh, he doesn't have the mobility. He's actually a better athlete than Nick Foles, so just get that off your plate. He's faster, quicker than him, but he's not the same caliber athlete as guys who generally run this offense. This offense is basically built for quick decision-making as it is for a quarterback, and if Sam Bradford's afforded that opportunity to make quick decisions, I think he can. Getting the ball out of his hands, not taking hits, he's fine. His problem comes from dropping back, facing pressure coming at the middle, he gets flustered. So if he's allowed to make those quick Peyton Manning-like decisions, Sam Bradford will be fine in this offense. And I think Chip Kelly is actually doing a pretty solid job after looking like, to be honest, looking like the Mad Hatter for a second, losing his mind early in a couple of weeks ago. So we're going to move on to another team that's making a lot of moves, the Indianapolis Colts, signing Andre Johnson and Frank Gore. Now, a couple of guys who don't have many years left, but I say it like this. Even a rookie who comes in doesn't know if they have many years left in this league. Obviously, age and father time is pressing on Andre Johnson and Frank Gore, but both are proven veterans who can get the job done. Frank Gore is not going to be leaned on as the bell cow back. He'll still share carries with guys like Vic Ballard, guys like Ahmad Bradshaw, but they'll be more effective carries. Even Daniel Boone Heron will still get a few carries, okay? You'll actually get a running back who's intelligent enough to find holes, which Trent Richardson could not do. He could do it at Alabama. His problem was that Trent Richardson refused to make anyone miss, that he was a bit of a plotter. For some reason, he got to the NFL and could not find a hole. So Frank Gore is going to help out there. Also, Andre Johnson is going to give them a replacement for Reggie Wayne, a receiver who is going to be dependable, especially on third down. Different dynamic, as Reggie Wayne was more of an intermediate route runner, possession receiver. Andre Johnson still has the size and physicality to stretch the field deep and go up for those passes, and gives them a red zone threat to lock onto. And on the defense side of the ball, they got Trent Cole, a guy who's a dependable pass rusher, who now you have Mathis, you have Beyond Warner was kicked down into the five technique. I think that's a better position for him with what he's offering. So now you get the combo of the guys who are quote-unquote over the hill coming off the edge. I think in coordination with someone they'll probably pick up in the draft, this will be a good rotation, causing pressure to their opponents, and this will really be the benefit to the Colts. Now they can go after what they need early in the draft. Offensive line help. I will say this. The interior of that offensive line played admirably, but they're not talented compared to other groups that were playoff teams. They need to make moves. They'll probably go after an offensive lineman like Cameron Irvin, a guy who can play multiple positions, or Brandon Scherff, a guy who's a tackle and guard, probably kick him down to left guard, do something like that. So those two teams have done some really interesting things. And here's a move from a team that I'm going to kind of play into. The Kansas City Chiefs pick up Ben Grubbs. They needed help on the interior offensive line. You know, Rodney Hudson's played decent football, and they've played okay inside, but Ben Grubbs will be helpful for what Andy Reid wants to do in that offense. They send a fifth-round pick to New Orleans, which New Orleans will no doubt use on someone who should not be picked there. I'm just saying that as a fan, but we've seen them make good decisions early in drafts and make marginal decisions in the fourth, fifth, and sixth round. Usually the first, second, and third round, the players they draft usually are very talented and impact players, but after that, they don't keep people on the roster, hence why they're in such cap hell right now. It's been a long time since they've done well with fourth, fifth, and sixth round picks. They also sent away Jimmy Graham. Definitely a financial move, but also a move that proved that they're betting and banking on one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL. I actually heard rumblings at a Saints game that I went to, Saints Carolina game, at the end of the season, December 7th. Heard grumblings and rumblings of people saying, oh, it's time to get rid of Drew Brees. And you know what? It's time to protect Drew Brees. He was pressured more in 2014 than the 3 years prior combined, when they went 13-3, 11-5, and 13-3, as far as I'm aware of. Maybe I'm wrong. But they had great runs. And if you protect a guy like Tom Brady, who wasn't protected early in the season because they suffered from losing Logan Mankins, and he looked like a pedestrian quarterback, people forget. People asked if it was over in time for Garoppolo a few weeks into the season when they lost badly to the Chiefs. To Tom Brady is all of a sudden the best player in the NFL again because he was protected. Protecting a quarterback who makes good decisions is huge and more important than any skill position player in the league, even Calvin Johnson or Adrian Peterson. Protection is number one. So the loss of Graham will affect Saints, especially their game plan in the red zone, but I think they'll go back to a more balanced offense, not just in the run game, but the passing game, and stop forcing the ball to Graham in situations that don't play well. Also, financially, it helped out. They signed him to a big contract, one of the biggest, I think the biggest tight end contract in NFL history. Now they get to really deal with protecting Drew Brees, and getting in a guy like Max Unger was huge. And the final thing the Saints did was signing Brandon Browner. This adjusts their situation quite a bit. Brandon Browner, while not a number one corner, barely a number two corner, will work very well in a Rex Ryan defense, or Rob Ryan defense, sorry, that wants you to be able to press and be physical. That's why they drafted Stanley Jean-Baptiste, and he just didn't progress as late as they thought he would. So now you have a guy in there in Brandon Browner who's really going to get in there, be physical. He's going to get interference calls, but it allows you to fly up the field and get pressure. What these moves all did, and some Saints fans are going to want Max Williams or tight end to match Jimmy Graham's talent. I think they're fine. Tight end is pretty deep this year. They can get one later in the draft. O'Shaughnessy out of Illinois State, a guy like that, in the sixth round, they could probably get him. Early on in the draft, you bank on one of those pass rushers, especially if Vic Beasley's sitting there around that 9th to 10th pick. I can see the Saints trading up and going to get him and taking care of that position. And then as you flow down, you start to look at a guy like a Carl Davis that they could get in the early second round to take care of that nose tackle position as well. The Saints will address defense this year in the draft. They will take care of that. And my hope and dream from getting Brandon Browner is that they stay away from drafting corners high, because that just does not fly well for them. They need to look at drafting cornerbacks late who have great ball skills and the length to play the position, instead of going after these guys who just run fast 40s. Going to slip this little side note in there for the Atlanta Falcons. Getting Adrian Claiborne in there might actually be a pretty interesting one for them. They have not had consistency. He will play on the left end side, holding up well against the run, just not the guy who's the rush end that you need on the right side. I think with that transitional 3-4-4-3 defense, that hybrid that they're playing, you know, getting a guy like Dan Quinn in there as coach, I'm sure he's going to want to make some adjustments to the 4-3, will be very helpful for them. And now, even if they go after a pass rusher, they at least have the left side, they have depth there to function, because Adrian Claiborne holds up very well against the run. Like I said, pass rushing, he gives effort, but it's not his strength getting to the quarterback. It's more driving up the field and causing havoc from that position. The Ravens keep Justin Forsett. Now, this is huge, because in my mocks, the last two, I've had them drafting Todd Gurley, and I'm sticking to it. If Todd Gurley's sitting there, I feel like this was a move by the Ravens to get a guy in there who had a good season, give him a veteran contract. They know that Todd Gurley's probably going to redshirt this year. Lorenzo Taliaferro was not the guy that is going to be your premier back. They got him late in the draft last year for a reason. Bernard Pierce was also supposed to be a fill guy. He initially came in with some, I knew he had talent coming out of Temple, but he hasn't produced to the same level that was expected. You know that a guy like Ozzie Newsome loves to make decisions that really confuse people. You know that when talent's sitting out there, that these Ravens are going to jump on it, especially when they can get the benefit of a guy being redshirted, not putting carries on him early, not having to hurry him back. So I fully expect them to still, if Todd Gurley's there, attack him late in the first round. The Jets making big decisions and big choices, in my opinion. I like what the Jets have done in a lot of different scenarios. Now, let's start with the first one. The Jets decided to bring in Darrelle Revis with a huge contract, five years, $70 million. You wonder why the Jets were making all these moves. You know, Brandon Marshall, they cut Percy Harvin, making all these. I think the Todd Bowles is doing exactly what I thought he's going to do in the draft, but he's doing it with veteran players. He's bringing in guys who fit his scheme and allow him to fly up the field. So now you bring back Antonio Cromartie. So now you have those two guys with the ability to truly come up and play you man-to-man, press, and allow the underneath to bring blitzes, exotic pressures, keep a single high safety. You can bring Calvin Taylor down in the box. And you have Buster Skrine, who will probably end up playing the number three corner. So I think that they're set with the Jets. And the other move that I actually liked, and I'm going to eat some words that I said before. I like them bringing in Ryan Fitzpatrick. Do I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is a franchise quarterback? No. Do I think that Ryan Fitzpatrick has enough in his tank to force Geno Smith to play a little bit better? Absolutely. And it doesn't put the pressure on the organization to proof out anything, because I doubt now with the Fitzpatrick move that they drafted Marcus Mariota, who I did initially have them mocked as taking in my second mock. I think that one of two things, they'll either trade out of that pick, or if someone really does want Mariota that badly, or they'll pick another defensive player, because Fitzpatrick can push Geno Smith for the starting job. Again, by no means am I saying Ryan Fitzpatrick is a quality NFL starting quarterback, a guy who you can hitch your franchise wagon to, but I think he's good enough to be a spot starter and push your young guy who's now going into his third year. This is the year when you start having a proving ground into being a better football player. Sticking in the division, the AFC East, Ndamukong Suh goes to the Dolphins. Now, here's what it does for the Miami Dolphins. They clearly overpaid for the production that Sue's going to put in the play, even the helpful nature of what he's going to do. But here's what it does. He puts fear in the hearts of the interior, that right, left guard, and that center. Sue is a very disruptive force. Gerald McCoy and Geno Atkins are right in there with being that disruptive up front. You know, you could say J.J. Watt as well, but different position played. I'm looking at guys who play that three, the one, not the five, not anything that's outside shoulder. I want you either on the guard or on the center or in a gap, whatever. He's going to cause pressure from that position. What he's also going to do is, by causing pressure, he's going to screw up the run. He's not the greatest guy against the run. What he does against the run and what he offers is, when you cause penetration, run lanes seem to shut down. And when run lanes seem to shut down, running backs tend to bounce it outside. And when a running back bounces it outside, the defense has an opportunity to react and tackle the guy. So a run defense that was mediocre at best is now going to be above average to good. A pass defense that was pretty solid is now, in my opinion, going to be great, because you have pressure from the interior, which will allow guys like Cameron Wake, Olivier Vernon, to get up the field and cause pressure, either resulting in sacks, missed passes, interceptions, whatever it may be. So the Sue signing, while grossly overpaid, was huge, and it's going to force the Dolphins. I don't think they're going to go after corner early in the draft. I really don't. I think now they're going to focus back onto the offense, because now corner's not your main concern. You know, Trey Waynes was a guy that I was mocking, and now I think that they're going to really attack the offensive line, especially the interior of the offensive line, if it offers up, or a tackle if it's available. I think they have more flexibility now with that Sue signing. It makes their corners go up a notch, each of them. The Browns keep Jordan Cameron. That's a huge move, because I think what Cleveland's looking at now is, they say, okay, we want threats. We know that Josh Gordon is going to not really be. We don't know what the heck's going to happen with Josh Gordon. I have a sneaking suspicion that Cleveland's going to make some weird moves. And if Oakland makes a decision to go with a guy like Kevin White, okay, look for an interesting trade to happen, okay? At that fifth pick, you can see something weird happening. Maybe Mariota's taken by Washington, which is a completely different story for me to get onto. But I think that Mari Cooper will slip to that sixth pick. If he slips to the sixth pick, you start to go, ding, 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 ding. We don't want him slipping to the seventh, because I think Chicago would take Amari Cooper. People keep saying, oh, they need safety. They just lost Brandon. Marshall. Alshon Jeffrey's there, but most teams that are really good either have a dominant quarterback or dominant receiving core. Amari Cooper is the cleanest prospect at receiver by far in this draft. If Cleveland wants to be really interesting, trade up. You have two first-round picks. You can probably get some good value and trade back later to get back down and get those picks back. And you can get Amari Cooper with Jordan Cameron. Oh, You missed out on Sammy Watkins last year and picked Justin Gilbert. Now you're going to end up getting Amari Cooper. If that happens, I think it would be interesting. That's why I think this Jordan Cameron signing is pretty interesting, because I think it gives them the opportunity to attack more on the offensive side now that you have another weapon. If they wouldn't have had Jordan Cameron, I think they keep both picks, understanding that they need to get more on the offense or defense or whatever. But now that they're going to keep them, it would be really interesting to see what they do with those two first-round picks. I don't think they're going to keep both. I think they're going to make a move, and it could be that one. And then the final thing I want to address is the Haloti Ngata situation. You know, this directly affects my draft pick, because I had Eddie Goldman going in the first round to the Detroit Lions, knowing that they weren't going to re-sign Sue, too expensive, and that Nick Fairley might not come back either. But now they go get Haloti Ngata, another active guy on the front line. You know, I think they traded a fourth, a fifth, and a seventh. So now they can't attack a defensive lineman that early in the draft, because now they got rid of their fourth, fifth, and seventh. I think this changes up their scheme completely on what they're going to approach in this draft. And now I think that they do go after corner. I think they go after corner early. Okay? Looking at maybe, like I said, a Trey Wayans, a guy who will likely go higher than that. But this draft is funky and funny. Some things happen and you never know why. They might go after Jalen Collins, which we'll get into in a few weeks, my opinion of Jalen Collins. Definitely a heck of an athlete. Good long press corner, but we'll see where he's ranked in my cornerback rankings in a few weeks. So that's what I wanted to talk about with free agency, folks. Like I said, if you ever want to be a part of the show, that call-in number is 323-657-1489. That's 323-657-1489. I'm going to go ahead and get into the rankings of the offensive linemen. And now I'm going to give you kind of some things that I go over. Number one, these are my rankings based on video footage, games that I've seen of these players. If I have not seen a player, then I cannot rank them. So there are going to be some guys. There's a guy who I'm going to mention who's very high on people's boards, plays offensive guard. I have not seen him play football. I cannot rank him if I have not seen him play football. I'm not going to. And that's to each his own. It's just not me. So I'm going to rank them based on some traits that I think the position needs. Also, the success level that I think they can have operating at certain positions. I'm going to recommend a position for them as far as, you know, right side, left side. Maybe they can kick inside, but their initial will be at set position. So with the tackles, my number one overall tackle is Lyle Collins out of LSU. Physical guy, 6'5", 308 pounds. I think I gave him a first-round grade. Now, he's a guy who has played in a very run-heavy offense, multiple sets, blocks very well against the pass. He tends to be a little heavy-footed, so you think speed rushers can get around him. He actually redirects better than you would expect, especially being the type of build that he is. Built more like a guard, and at some point in his career, I'm pretty sure that people thought we're going to move him to guard, but he's held up very well at the tackle position, especially the left tackle, in a very pass rush heavy SEC. Think that on the next level, he can have success at left tackle or left guard, depending on the system. If he was in, let's say, the Saints system, very pass heavy, left guard would probably be the position for him. But if he's in a system like San Francisco's, I think that left tackle would actually work very well for him. I'm not going to give out many comparisons, because for offensive linemen, I just don't have the depth of feel for a comparison. If someone pops off the screen for me, then I have a comparison, and one did for this young man, and that's Cordy Glenn. I think that both, you know, a little bigger in the way that they're built, seem heavy-footed, seem like they wouldn't be able to take the speed rush very, very well, but they both do surprisingly well with speed rushers. My number two guy is Andres Pete out of Stanford. This early entry junior, 6'7", about 310 pounds. I gave him a first round grade. Now, Pete is one of those guys, he climbs the second level well, he reaches very well, He also holds up against the speed rush and power rush very well. Now, what does happen, though, is that he seems to fail against secondary moves, especially to the inside. I think that that comes from developing his technique and getting a little bit better, but the upside is there. The natural ability is there. When you see him on tape, he actually does pop very well. And I think that he is a prototype left tackle in the NFL. With his athleticism, I think he compares very favorably to a guy like a Tyron Smith. That's the guy who popped in my head when I saw him initially on tape. So I think that he's definitely an early round pick. I'd be shocked if he makes it out of the first round with the talent that he offers and the physical ability. Actually, more physical ability than Lyle Collins. I just think Lyle Collins is a more proven and polished prospect at this point, which is why I ranked him higher. My number three guy is Eric Flowers out of Miami. Another early entry junior, 6'5", 320 pounds. Gave him a first round grade as well. Now, Eric Flowers is one of those guys. He protects very well, has movement skills. One of the things is he doesn't bend well enough to take on a speed rusher. He will redirect with his hands. I do like what he has to offer there, but he's not a guy who really does that against the speed rusher as well, especially if the speed rusher has a secondary move. Seeing him, I think that he reminded me of Andre Smith from the Bengals. Definitely physical ability, but you do see where the flaw in his game may lie. Number four guy is TJ Clemens out of Pittsburgh. This redshirt senior, 6'5", 307 pounds, gave him a first-round grade as well. Now, he can play on the left side or right side for me, probably would be more successful on the right side in my opinion. Reason being is that he is a very physical guy. He actually, his physicality and the fact that he is attacking gets him off his base. And as a left tackle, you want to be appropriately aggressive. So you have to be reactive and sit back, but also react and also be aggressive. I think that he's too aggressive, explaining that he probably should be on the right side, more of the run blocking, run driving technique. That's the negative that I drew from him, is that he seems to get off his base and attacks the defender a little bit too much. Like the aggression, but that leaves you open to being beat, especially with a move inside out. You'll be beat, pushed down, and your quarterback will be in jail. Number five guy is Cedric Abui out of Texas A&M. This redshirt senior is 6'5", 300 pounds. Gave him a second-round grade. Think that he can play the right tackle or left tackle. Now, the thing about Abui is he is more athlete early in his career than he was technician. And I think he started to learn before the injury how to be more of a technician with his hands, the use of his hands. Really started to be a guy who could be dependable on the left side. I thought initially he was more of a right tackle. So I found him playing either. And the guy that popped off the screen to me, because of the way that he played coming out of college, is Ryan Clady. Number six guy is Rob Hevenstein out of Wisconsin. 6'7", 330 pound senior, second round grade was given to him. I put him on the right side. Reason being is I feel like he engages very well. I think he engages probably better than anyone other than maybe Lyle Collins. They're probably what and what. He might be a little better. And he's able to control, but he doesn't have quick feet at all. He's actually more heavy-footed than Collins. So playing on the left side would probably be a struggle for him. I think that he would get beat a few times too many. Playing on that right side, I think that he'd be able to control. I think that he would be smart because he does definitely use his intelligence over anything else. And when I say it like that, you can tell that he kind of set early to make sure that he doesn't get beat. And when he gets you engaged, you're not getting off of it. So on the left side, I think that he wouldn't be able to get on some of those slippery guys. I think that right side would probably be the place that he's more successful on the next level. And he would definitely be a great addition to a team. I think that I would love him for the New Orleans Saints. I'll say it like that. If we had him on the right side instead of a Zach Strief. Number seven guys, Tyler Sambrelio out of Colorado State. This senior is 6'6", 309 pounds. He's a second round grade, in my opinion. Definitely a left side guy. Does very well when guys are coming around the edge on him. He's not the quickest of foot guy, but he does handle it very well. Redirects, get them to go up the field. Now, his negative is that he's not strong at the point of attack. I think that, for me at least, a guy who's on the left side has to be able to keep the garbage off you, that pass rushing ability off of the quarterback, whether it's pushing him up the field, whatever he needs to do. And I think that Sabrello can do that. On the right side, I think that you have to be more aggressive in causing an area for the quarterback to step up and step to. Usually your right-handed quarterback, you're going to be looking that way anyway. You want a guy who can redirect, get the guy up the field on the left side so you don't have to worry about it. And on the right side, you want a guy to be able to kind of take care of the garbage from being aggressive. That's not really his game as far as that lower body strength. So I think that he worked well on the left side. My number eight guy is Austin Shepherd out of Alabama. 6'5", 320-pound tackle. A guy who is very technically sound. I like what Austin Shepherd has to offer. You know, guys coming out of Alabama playing on that offensive line have gotten some criticism of late. I think that they do a really good job with teaching them certain techniques and ways to hold up. I think that for what he lacks in the ability to be athletic, he makes up for in his technical skill. Some people want him to move in the guard. I think that he's fine at tackle. And I actually think that he can play left tackle on the next level if necessary. But right tackle is probably where he lies because of the lack of lateral quickness that he has with his feet. Jake Fisher is my number nine tackle prospect out of Oregon. 6'6", 300 pounds. He's a third round grade. So is Austin Shepherd. And Fisher is a guy who he adjusts very well, definitely is able to work well in space, and he proved that at Oregon. Now, he also, his legs die on contact. It's not one thing that I'm a very big fan of. The national championship really showed a lot to me from some of the Oregon players, and Fisher is a guy who I think will be successful in the next level, but it wasn't really a performance that was very glowing. My number 10 guy is DJ Humphrey out of Florida. Early entry junior, 6'5", just above 300 pounds. I gave him a fourth round grade. I think that he would work well on the left side if he's able to reach. He's got pretty solid footwork. He's more athlete than technician at this point, but he's still learning. He's a little behind the curve. And because of that, he reminds me of Bruce Campbell that played for the Raiders. I think he's a little better than Campbell. Campbell is probably the best offensive tackle athlete to come out in the last few years, which is why he kind of reminded me of that as a comparison. Darrell Williams, my number 11 offensive tackle out of Oklahoma. 6'5", 330 pounds. Fourth round grade to this right tackle. Definitely strong at the point of attack. Another guy like Hevenstein who's really going to lock onto you, engage, and make sure that you're going to feel their presence. Now, he does get sloppy with his footwork, and also his base is a little bit off, so any secondary moves would really get past him. That's why I think he'd work better on the right side than the left. A little heavy-footed in his transition, and doesn't really kick as well as the other tackle prospects. My number 12 tackle, Jeremiah Patasi out of Utah. Did a great job for Utah this past season as an early entry. This junior, 6'6", 325 pounds, gave him a fourth round grade as well. Now, one of the things, and I think that he's a left tackle on the next level. One of the things that you saw is that even with his aggression, was still some confidence to hold up against whoever he was battling. One of the things that was a negative, though, is he became predictable in what he was going to do. Once guys started to mix it up a little bit against him, it seemed like it confused him. He's got to get a little bit better with adjusting to that. It might be from film study. I don't know. Don't know the young man. But it just seemed like, and I saw more of him than I expected to, being that he was a West Coast guy, but making that adjustment, making adjustments to guys who are doing different things to attack him, that's something that knocked him down on this list, you know, to this position. I think he could have been ranked higher because of what he physically can offer, but it was that lack of adjustment to multiple moves. My number 13 guy is Donovan Smith out of Penn State, 6'6", 341 pounds. Gave him a fifth-round grade. Now, one of the things about this guy, also very strong at the point of attack. I think that he is too aggressive in some respects. And, again, why I think he works well on the right side. Works well in small space, not the fastest or quickest guy, but I think he does a good job with aggression. The base that he works with isn't the tightest, so you know that you're going to get some positives from him, but some negatives are also offered up. That's why I have him on the right side instead of the left side. Brett Boyko out of UNLV is my number 14 tackle prospect, 6'7", 310-pound senior, fifth-round grade on him. I think he's a classic left tackle. I think that he does very well. Reminds me of Tino that came out of Nevada last year. Guys who are just really quality in how they attack. Patino was a little nastier than this guy, but this guy definitely holds up well. I think for what he lacks in overall physical ability, he makes up for in his decision-making and covering up his mistakes with quality technique. Tayo Fabuli out of TCU is my number 15 prospect, 6'7", 350 pounds. Gave him a fifth-round grade as well. I think that he can play on either side of the ball, left tackle or right tackle, I should say. Another guy who I think should probably play at a lower weight. You can tell that he kind of got fatigued on the lower body in the second half of games. Even when TCU was blowing people out, you saw that he kind of, I'm not going to say by any means gave up, but it seemed like he just wasn't able to sustain the same level of play throughout the game. So that was probably why I gave him a lower grade than some others and moved him down the list a little bit. My number 16 guy is Jamon Brown out of Louisville, 6'4", 330 pounds. Gave him a six-round grade, a guy who I think can play on the left side and be successful. One of the things about Brown is while his footwork is pretty adequate, I do think he does not allow himself to have a solid base. And what I mean by that is he doesn't set with good balance. And it seems like it's easier to get him off and make it a rip inside move. As he develops more of that balance and sets with a little bit of a stronger base, I think that he can be an extremely good tackle. Since he has that negative in his game, that's why he's ranked as number 16, but could have definitely been ranked higher because he does work well with his hands and directing guys up the field. But I did see some guys make a swim move or two inside on him, and he was not able to react properly because he didn't have the base set up, which allowed them to make the move back inside. Tyrus Thompson is my number 17 guy out of Oklahoma. 6'5", 330 pounds. Gave him a six-round grade as well. I think that he works well either on the left or right side. I think that both of those tackles out of Oklahoma were more right tackles because of the aggression that they used, the physicality, and not having the footwork and the strength in their lower base to really support movements by defensive ends against them. So I think that both work well on the right side of the ball. Left tackle that I think actually works pretty well is Sean Hickey out of Syracuse. He's my number 18 prospect, the senior, 6'6", 308. He's got a six-round grade on him. Think, like I said, he could play left side or right side. I'd be comfortable with him at the left side. Definitely skilled in his approach to the game. I like what he offers against even speed rushers, but speed rushers do give him trouble. Does remind me a little bit of his old teammate, Justin Pugh, out of Syracuse, who now plays for the Giants. Two more guys to go. Corey Robinson out of South Carolina is my number 19 guy, 6'7", 344 pounds. He's got a seventh-round grade. Think that he works well on the right side. Now, one of the things that I noticed about Robinson, he was ranked higher in my preseason outlook, or at least I expected him to be ranked higher. One of the things about him is that he did not, he seemed to use any bit of athleticism that he used over consistency with his technique, seemed to be all over the place with his protection and how he took care of things. Really was confusing because I expected him to have a good base. He seemed to be a little sloppy with his transitions. So I was really surprised by that. And then my number 20 guy is Eric LaFell out of Cincinnati. 6'6", 310 pounds. Gave him a seventh round grade as well. I think he works better on the right side. Played on the left side some at Cincinnati. Thing about LaFell, I think that he also does have legs that die a little bit on contact. Does hold up well enough, though, and has functional strength. Does lock on and engage very well without having to hold or pull at a guy. But he can be driven back a little bit into the quarterback. That's not going to work well on the left side. At least on the right side, it's more visual. And I think that he can improve that in leg drop with some of the training that will happen on the next level. I think as far as his technical skill, how he sets, that is fine. I think that that's okay, and that's why I have him ranked. So those are my guys, 1 through 20, that I ranked in this particular situation. Here's some small school guys just to think of. Actually, I don't have any small school guys for the tackle position. I think the only one is Cole Manhart out of Nebraska Kearney. That's the only guy who I have as a small school guy as a tackle. For the guard position, at the guard position, my number one overall guard, had him ranked as a tackle because that's what he played at Iowa, but I think that people were kind of, I'm conforming to the fact that he's probably going to end up playing guard on the next level, and that's Brandon Scherff out of Iowa, 6'5", 320 pounds, gave him a first round grade. One of the reasons that I moved him to guard over the tackle position is his footwork as a tackle, kick slide, wasn't completely the best. I think that he actually had a pretty solid base, though. People did not push him back into the quarterback. Think that he has enough quickness to get to the second level and operate in small space as a guard, and that's probably why he'll be more successful at the guard position than the tackle position on the next level. My number two guard, Lincoln Tomlinson out of Duke, 6'3", 320 pound senior. Second round grade is what I gave him. I think that Tomlinson is one of the guys who he's actually a quality blocking, pass blocking offensive guard. Generally, you look for the nastiness, the ability to pull, get to the second level if necessary, that quickness in tight spaces. His strength, in my opinion, lies in his ability to pass block. Definitely a guy who fits into certain schemes a little bit better than others. Like I said, I use the Saints as a gauge for teams that actually like pass-blocking guards. They have the nastiness of a guard, but they really do set well, and they could play as a tackle on some other squads because of their ability and their footwork that's necessary. My number three guard is Ari Quanjo out of Alabama, 6'5", 318-pound senior. Gave him a third-round grade. Reason being, I think that Quanjo, while not having the greatest season this year, I think that he actually does do well with what's necessary to play guard on the next level. All those pieces I just described, I think that he does an admirable job at it, and he's developing comfort with his base. Did tend to play a little sloppy at times, and I think as he refines some of his footwork, he'll be better on the next level and could be a steal as a third-round pick. AJ Khan's my number four tackle, guard prospect. 6'3", 311 pounds, gave him a third-round grade. Now, he was my number one guard preseason, the guy that I looked at as a possible first-round pick. South Carolina's line, it looked like they did not have the technical skill, and I was really surprised. I've seen a lot of South Carolina games this past season, and I was shocked. I was actually very surprised to see the lack of footwork from all positions across that line. Dylan Thompson is a quarterback that I wouldn't have drafted after watching this season. He was under duress quite a bit and early, and they didn't even open up holes that well. I think this kid does do a functional job with his hands. Doesn't get to the second level as much as I would like him to, as easily, and his game is not as clean as I initially thought it was, which is why I have him ranked as my fourth guard instead of being ranked higher. John Miller is my number five guard out of Louisville. I actually like this kid and what he has to offer. I did give him a fourth round grade. But the fourth round grade, I actually gave him a third round grade. My apologies. The third round grade is mainly based on the fact that I think he plays a little high for a guard. He doesn't get around like he should, but strong guy at the point of attack. I think that he pushes people around when necessary. Trey Jackson is my number six guard out of Florida State, 6'4", 320 pounds. Definitely a guy who shows strength in his ability to attack. Trey Jackson, out of the two guards from Florida State, was a guy who I thought really showed a little better with the talent base that he had and his footwork and what he was able to offer. Jamil Douglas out of Arizona State is my number seven guard this year. 6'4", 307 pounds. I gave him a fifth round grade. Trey Jackson had a fourth round grade, by the way, folks. And the fifth round grade for this young man came from the ability. I think that he actually does have that nastiness. He has that streak. And he does do well with footwork. Now, the negative is that it doesn't seem like he is as strong for me as I expected him to be at the point of attack. John Feliciano is my number eight guard out of Miami, 6'4", 355 pounds, fifth round grade as well. Feliciano uses his hands pretty well. One of the things is that he does get driven back a little bit more than I would expect it. His base isn't as strong as I would have thought it would be, but he does use his hands, shield pretty well. I think that he would do a little bit better in a system that allowed him to use the technical skill over that physical strength, because he doesn't really play at his weight. Adam Shedd is my number nine guard prospect out of Oklahoma, 6'4", 340 pounds. Like I said, all those guys from Oklahoma were functionally strong at the point of attack, but they had a little bit lacking in their technical side of their game, seemed to be a little sloppy with working with their hands. Once engaged and locked on, he was fine, but it seems like guys were able to make moves with their hands to kind of get him into a bad situation, and he didn't respond as well as I might have liked. Jose Matias is my number 10 guard prospect out of Florida State, 6'6", 325 pounds. Now, he lost his base quite a bit. I didn't like, especially in pass pro, how he set. I think that once he set in pass pro and a guy made a move on him, that he was a little bit off-center. Definitely didn't like that. And he wasn't as aggressive in the run-blocking scheme this year as it seemed like he was last year when he had the opportunity to play. So he actually fell down my list a little bit this season. Robert Myers out of Tennessee State is my number 12 guard prospect, 6'5", 329 pounds, also had a fifth round grade. Now, some good strength from this kid. He was able to manhandle the competition. Once engaged, he definitely showed that power, had a good solid base. Now, two things that happened. Number one, its level of competition, and also from the footage I've seen, there was a lack of a double move or secondary move from the defensive tackle prospect that he was facing. With that being offered up, I don't know how he would handle that if he's able to be disrupted and off base due to that secondary move. So I could not rank him higher than this level for right now. I'm sorry, he was my number 11 prospect. My number 12 prospect was Ben Beckwith out of Mississippi State. Definitely a great drive blocker, a guy who does get engaged and get you up the field. Gave him a six-round grade. Thing with Ben Beckwith is it's sloppy footwork. Like I said, once engaged, he drives well. You're not going to knock him off his base, but the footwork in general is sloppy. I think in pass protection, he didn't offer up what I would like to have seen. Does pull well and does function in that manner very well, and that's a positive to be drawn. Miles Diffenbach out of Penn State, 6'3", 303 pounds. Also a six-round grade. A guy who played very well alongside Donovan Smith, protecting Christian Hackenberg. One of the guys who I think will be successful on the next level because of the ability to really set and function well enough in pass protection. Now, on the run blocking side, didn't really seem to drive block as well as I would have liked. And as a guard, you're going to have to do quite a bit of that, especially depending on the team you go to, which was a negative. Suffered an injury earlier this year and suffered an injury during the season, which didn't allow him to complete this senior year. Hope he gets well before draft and everything's all fine and good. And then my final ranked player is Quentin Spain out of West Virginia. Spain actually did a really good job. I did not expect him to do as great of a job this year from that guard position. Held up well in pass protection. Didn't get beat quite as much as I expected him to. And when I say it like that, struggled beforehand. So he definitely improved on his pass protection. Got better with that. And from the run side, that's where I had the issue this season. Didn't seem to really engage as well as I would have liked. And that will have to be cleaned up for him to be functional on the next level. Now, there's quite a few guard prospects that are looked at with some high honors this year. One is Ali Marpet out of Hobart. He's probably going to go in the second round, folks. A guy who I didn't see much of, you know, East-West Shrine Game type thing, whatnot, but I didn't see enough of to feel comfortable grading, especially since it's a guy who everyone is a buzz about. But all the things I've heard have been good about his physicality, his strength, the fact that he sets well, things like that, but I haven't personally seen it to the level that I would like to have really given a rank to this guy. But like I said, all good things that I've heard about him and his athleticism and strength. Also, Antoine Everett out of McNeese State, heard good things about him. Scott Inskeep out of University of Texas, San Antonio. Would have liked to see more of him. And Cambry Williams out of South Alabama. Tried to see a little bit more on him, like I saw Brandon Bridge, but I really couldn't get an assessment off of anything I saw. Most of the time it seemed like he wasn't in the shot. It was very odd. So those are the guys that I felt comfortable ranking from the offensive tackle and offensive guard positions. I will do the centers next week when I do the defensive line prospects. Ran out of a little time this week. This is an hour-long show, folks. Remember, as usual, you can be a part of the show if you'd like to. The call-in number is 323-657-1489. You can always hit me up with questions on Twitter. My Twitter handle is CJFlorida9. Emery is the same with FBallGamePlan being his Twitter handle. Gene Clemens at Gene Clemens. And you can hit us all up on Twitter. We're very responsive, especially Emery. He responds extremely quickly via Twitter. So, folks, for the Football Game Plan Radio Network, this is Chris James signing off. Enjoy your weekend, and hopefully your team signs someone in free agency that you really love. Take care.